Welcome to Chair Chat, an online web series hosted by me, Jamie Harrison, the chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Our goal in this series is to begin to look at political leaders, activists, and people involved in politics in a three-dimensional manner. We will move past the political caricatures to get to know the individual. So now, let's chat. Senator Bernie Sanders is one of the more identifiable members of the United States Senate. From his famous hair to his progressive views, he's known as a loud advocate for what he believes. Let's get under the hair of Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you very much.
Senator, welcome to South Carolina. So what brought you down here? Why are you in the Palmetto State this weekend?
Well, two reasons. I'll be speaking to the Democrats, South Carolina Democrats, and it is no secret that I am giving some thought to running for President of the United States. And as you may know, South Carolina is up there on the list of early primary states.
Since you caucus with Democrats, but we know that you are an advocate and you've been for a long time, that you are a socialist. You're an independent in the Congress. So why come to the Democratic Party?
Well, I have been elected always from the state of Vermont from the days when I was elected mayor of the city of Burlington as an independent, not as a Democrat, not as a Republican outside of the two-party system. In fact, I am the longest serving independent in the history of the United States Congress, and I'm proud of that. But I have also been caucusing with the Democratic Party for the last 23 years. So I know a little bit about the Democratic Party. In fact, right now I'm the ranking member of the Budget Committee, that is the leader of the Democrats on that committee in opposition. And last year I was chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee. So I, you know, work within the Democratic Party in Washington. What democratic socialism means to me is that we should take a hard look at what's going on in countries like Denmark and Sweden and Norway, countries where people have health care as a right, where college education is free, where the child care system is extraordinary and much less expensive than it is in the United States, where income and wealth inequality are much less warped than it is here in the United States. And I think there's a lot to be learned from those countries which have had social democratic governments.
Well, I want to delve into a little about you. So you grew up in Brooklyn. You worked on a kibbutz in Israel. How did you end up in Vermont?
Well, it was a very good move. When I was a kid, we grew up in a family that didn't have a whole lot of money. And I used to go to Boy Scout camp. It was pretty inexpensive. My parents sent me there. And it turned out that growing up in Brooklyn, I really loved the country.
Yeah.
And that stayed with me. And when we had the opportunity to move to Vermont way back in 1964, that's what we did. And then I moved back to the city, but more or less settled in Vermont in 1968.
Okay. Now, while you were in high school, I read that you ran track.
I was a pretty good distance runner. Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
In fact, I came in third place in 1 year in the New York City mile, 4:37. And I also won a number of Brooklyn and neighborhood type cross country events. So, yeah, I was a pretty good runner.
Wow. Do you
Not
still
a superstar, but I was pretty good.
Do you still run?
Oh, only for votes, when I'm late. That's about it.
I also read that, for the past few years, and particularly this year, we were celebrating the 50-year anniversary of Selma. But I read that you took a bus down and participated in the March on Washington. Tell us about your participation in that great event.
Well, I became involved in the civil rights movement when I was in college at the University of Chicago. And we did two basic things. I was involved in a group called the Congress on Racial Equality, CORE.
Yeah.
And we focused in two areas. Number one, Chicago at that time, I don't know what it is today, was a pretty segregated city. And the schools were pretty segregated. So we worked on trying to desegregate schools and also worked on housing. What we did was some very funny things where some young white students would go out and talk to a landlord and say, you know, I'm interested in the apartment, and as well, here it is, and this is how much it cost. And then 5 minutes later, we would send in some young black kids, and they would look at the same apartment. Oh, apartment is not available. And we were able to document that. And so that, you know, was effective. And the second thing that we did is to try to give very modest amounts of financial support to people like John Lewis and the folks at the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, our, you know, the fellow college students who were taking on segregation in the South. So that was kind of the twin effort that we made. And then, of course, there was the famous March on Washington, and many of us got on a bus, and we went to Washington and heard Dr. King. I've often remarked that the first three or four times that I went to Washington, I was never inside a building. I was always outside protesting, and that was kind of one of the times.
Well, Jewish kid from Brooklyn, engaged in the civil rights movement, you know, there are a lot of young folks, and sad to say, people in my generation, who probably don't know much about the coalition that was formed between the African-American community and the Jewish community.
That's right.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that, and do you see any of those type of coalitions in modern America?
Or today's America?
Well, that coalition, you know, comes about from the fact that, you know, throughout Jewish history, modern Jewish history, and of course the Holocaust is the worst, the most extreme example, Jews have been persecuted. And therefore it became, I think, kind of natural for Jews in the United States to see what was happening to the African-American community, the segregation and the racism, and to work in alliance with African-Americans. And there were some very important bonds that were established. And I hope that that type of relationship continues.
Yeah. Well, we know that you are an unabashed supporter and advocate of the working class in America. What makes you hopeful for the working class?
Well, I am an unabashed supporter because that's my background, you know. So to me, it's not unabashed. That's who I am. My father came to this country without any money, and he never made any money. He was an immigrant, came to this country without a nickel in his pocket. And we lived in a small apartment in Brooklyn. So those are my people, and that's where I'm comfortable. Jamie, the major issue facing this country today that we don't talk about very much, but that we have got to talk about, is that for 40 years, the middle class of this country has been disappearing. So that you have, in terms of inflation accounted for dollars, people today working at lower wages than was the case 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And you have, when I was growing up, the expectation is that one person in a family in those days, the man, could work 40 hours a week and take care of the whole family. Today you need a woman, the wife working, the man working, the kids working, and they're still struggling to pay the bills. And the question that we have got to ask ourselves is, how does it happen with so much productivity and so much technology that people are falling further and further behind? And then the other side of the story is that the people on top are doing phenomenally well in terms of corporate profits being at a record-breaking level, and the wealthiest people in this country enjoying unbelievable increases in their income. So today you have the situation where 99% of all new income is going to the top 1%. Do you know that?
Wow.
99%. You have the situation where the top 0.1% owns as much wealth as the bottom 90%. And the question is, what do we do about it? Do we sit back and say, well, there's nothing going to happen? And then on top of that, all of these billionaires with all of their money, what are they just doing? They're buying politics. They're buying candidates. So as a result of Citizens United, you know, they are saying, we want you to run, and we're prepared to put hundreds of millions of dollars into your campaign. So my major fear is, if we don't turn this around, the United States is going to become a country where a handful of billionaires are going to control not only our economy, but our political life. And what I'm pledged to do in whatever form I can is to prevent that from happening.
If you ran for president, two or three words, what would define your campaign?
Standing up to the billionaire class, because there is no hope for this country. Now people can, unless we do that. Now people can say, well, I want to raise the minimum wage, or I believe in pay equity for women workers, or, you know, I want to rebuild the infrastructure, and I can go on and on, or I want to deal with climate change. All that is terribly important. But let me be very clear, nothing is going to happen unless we have the courage to take on the billionaire class. Do you think we do? Now let me throw it to you, young man.
Well, we do. Well, as long as we have champions like you, Center, who's helping to lead the effort, I think we are in good shape. One lighter note, when people listen or look at more optics than they do listen to the substance. Just recently, President Obama got characterized and criticized because he wore a tan suit. Are you going to change your style at all, Senator Sanders, if you run for president?
I will not wear a tan suit. And let me go on record right here. You know, when I was first elected mayor of Burlington, I didn't own a suit, to tell you the truth. I really didn't. All right, but your point is not a facetious point. It's a serious point. And that is, we live in a country where in the last election, 63% of the American people didn't vote.
Yes.
Most people don't know which political party controls the House or the Senate.
You're right.
And what we need to do is force the media to engage in serious discussion about serious issues, and that is certainly not the case right now.
No, I agree. Well, thank you, Senator Sanders.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
And thank you. And you're always welcome on Chair Chats.